Welcome back to Coast AM. This is Lisa Gar. So, how does one woman go from being a U.S. Navy commanding officer and an aide to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and on 9/11, and also earning the Defense Distinguished Service Medal Award and earning a master's degree in national security affairs and top political science at the U.S. Naval Academy? How does that person go to becoming an evidential medium? And her work being recognized by Dr. Gary Schwartz, the credible afterlife researcher, and Dr. Wayne Dyer. And she has quite a story, quite a transformation that has happened. And we're going to talk about, is there evidence of life after death from Suzanne Giesemann's perspective? So I want to mention to you that we are doing a great, great series. I'm doing a whole series on the afterlife right now. I'm having so much fun with this. I'm interviewing 30 different experts on their perspectives of the soul's existence before and after this lifetime. And you will be able to hear my whole series on my website. If you go to theawareshow.com/afterlife, you can sign up. I'm in the middle of recording this series right now, so you will be able to sign up for the series and get it right when it's done. And the website is theawareshow.com/afterlife. Go sign up there. And we will be back with Suzanne Giesemann when we come back. This is Lisa Gar. You're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. This is Lisa Gar. And my guest is Suzanne Giesemann. She wrote a book called Messages of Hope, where she outlines her incredible story of starting off as a U.S. Navy commander. And she served as a commanding officer, special assistant to the Chief of Naval Operations, and aide to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff on 9/11. And she's joining me to share her story, her incredible transformation. But let's start from the beginning. Welcome, Suzanne. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Lisa. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to talk with you again. I read the beginning of your book, and your story starts off with 9/11 up close and personal. Where were you at the time that the Twin Towers were hit?
I was in an aircraft with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. We were about 3 hours out over the Atlantic Ocean on our way to Europe because the chairman was going to be knighted by Queen Elizabeth later that week, and we never got there.
So when did you get the call, and what was the call?
We had a call over the radios that news about what people thought was a small aircraft crashing into the Twin Towers. And then when we found out that it was a larger aircraft, we were reporting all of this to the general, the chairman, as it went along. And when we realized it was terrorism, he said to me, "Tell the pilot to take us back." And I went up to the cockpit and said, "Take us back to Washington." And the pilot looked at me and he said, "Commander, our flight path is going to take us right over Manhattan." And it did. And it's as we were returning, I was on the radio with the colonel back at our office, the Pentagon, and he said, "I have to get off the phone. Something just happened here." And that was when the aircraft hit our building. So it was quite the experience.
Did you return to the Pentagon? Did you co
Yes, I did.
you
Yeah,
did?
we landed at Andrews Air Force Base and had a motorcade escort a policeman through the deserted streets of Washington, crossing the river, the Potomac. We could see the Pentagon burning, and we went right into the building as it was burning. I remember stepping over jet engine parts in the grass as we walked around the building to see the impact site, and it was quite an impact on all of us, let me tell you.
What did you cross over? I mean, were there people? Was there fuselage? What
It
did
was
you?
a piece of the pieces of the engine, little fins from the engine in the grass.
That must have been absolutely chilling. And at what did you do when you got there?
Well, first thing we did was went right into the general's office, and his terrorism expert came in and gave him a briefing. And then we went to see the site, and it was just so eerie walking through the halls, smelling the smoke, and nobody in the hallways. Normally, 23,000 people working there, and it was deserted except for the emergency workers. And
How long after the explosion did you get there?
It was, let me see, three. It was probably about 4 hours.
Wow, and there was already that much military, that much activity in terms of
Oh gosh, yes. Yeah.
the
And then you've probably seen those briefings where the chairman and the secretary of defense stand before that plaque that says the Pentagon, and they give their press releases. And I was standing right off to the side there as Secretary Rumsfeld and General Shelton gave their briefing and said the government is still intact, and we were all just stunned. You know, quite a shocking day for all of us, all around the world.
And I mean, what did you do that night? And I'm going somewhere with this, where you were there the whole day. Did you?
Yes, it was funny because my husband and I had said goodbye that morning for a week. I was supposed to be gone a week, and he had to come and get me. And I remember I wrote this in the book that when I had to have a policeman drive me to where my husband could pick me up because nobody could come up to the building, the Pentagon, to get me. And when I met my husband, we hugged, and he was so stiff. He was so filled with anger, rightfully so. But all I wanted to be was hugged, you know? That's just the difference in people. I just wanted to be comforted. And then, you know, nobody slept that night. And the next morning, you know, essential people only report to the Pentagon. Well, I was pretty essential in that capacity as the aide to the chairman, and to go back into the building that was still on fire. It burned for 3 days, Lisa.
You had to go
It was
back to work?
life-changing. Oh gosh, yes. And the chairman was, you know,
Right.
making decisions the whole time, and so there we were.
And your husband was also in the military, yes?
Yes, he was retired at that point, but he served 26 years. He was a destroyer captain, and
Wow.
yeah.
And you have a long history in your whole family. Your his children were also military.
Well, his daughter Susan joined the Marine Corps. This is funny. She asked me, you know, what service do you recommend I go in? I said, Susan, as a young woman, anything but the Marines. This was quite a few years ago. I don't know that I'd say that anymore because they're so tough, you know. And of course, what did she do? She joined the Marines.
Well, now this experience from, being there in 9/11 and the weeks that passed and the families that you assisted really shook you and
Oh,
for
it did.
life,
It
basically.
did. It caused me to think, you know, life is too short not to live your dreams while you can. And my husband and I had this dream for years to sell our house and cars and go off sailing into the sunset in our 46-foot sloop, our sailboat. And so it was because of 9/11 that I said, okay, the day I'm retirement eligible, we're going to live that dream. And that's exactly what we did.
How many years later?
It was 2 years. I wasn't eligible, but the very day that I had 20 years in the Navy, I retired, and the very next day we set sail, living aboard our boat, and sailed across the Atlantic. And
How was that?
that was awesome. It was a milestone for me because I overcame my fears to sail off into knowing that you could meet storms, and you'd be at the center of the Atlantic. We were 900 miles from the nearest land, and to not be afraid was huge for me. But at the same time, it was very tiring,
It's a
you
lot
know,
of
you have to
work.
stand watch round the clock, and it's constant motion and constant being alert. So, but it's something that I'm so thrilled that I did. Really cool to arrive in Europe and say, hey, we're
Wow.
here on our own. The wind pushed us here.
Oh my goodness, a sailboat,
Yeah.
much less. But both of you were very familiar with the seas, being in the Navy and him having a destroyer, I mean, a captain of a destroyer ship. I mean,
Well, let me correct you there in that I tell people I served 20 years in the Navy and I had to retire to go to sea because when I joined the Navy, most women were not allowed on ships. That opened up to women 10 years after I was in, and by that point I was too senior to start at the bottom on a ship. So I served shoreside my whole career, except for a few little forays on ships. Certainly very familiar with boats my whole life, so.
But 9/11 being the biggest turning point of your life.
Oh, yes, without a doubt.
Wait.
That's the point that started me asking the deep spiritual questions that we all eventually ask, like why were some people in the wrong place at the wrong time on that day?
Why did some people not make it there that to work that day
Yeah.
and not show up to the, to the Twin Towers? And I mean, those that escaped it, I've always wondered that as well. But and I've interviewed a few of them, and they've gone on to do amazing things with their lives. But Tell me about your interest in reading books on mediumship. And was this a hobby of yours?
I would say a small hobby, not a full-time thing at all, just a lifelong interest in metaphysical things. I thought that mediumship was pretty neat, but I never had any reason to look into it deeply because I hadn't lost anyone close to me, my grandparents, not even till I was in my late teens. But I remember reading about past life regressions. I remember trying out-of-body experiences, all of this while I was in the Navy, but you just didn't talk about it with your colleagues
Oh
at
no.
all. And I would go into New Age stores. Sometimes I'd still be in uniform, and I remember being in Washington, D.C. in uniform, and I'd feel like the out of place. But there was no written or unwritten rule that you weren't allowed to go into those kind of stores. It was just not the most accepted route.
Was your bookshelf at home filled with books on
Oh yeah.
mediumship and
Yeah, not mediumship so much, but just the whole gamut.
metaphysics?
Basically, a miniature of the new age bookstore, right?
That's fast. Do you know why you were attracted to the topic?
I know now. I didn't know why then.
You didn't know why. It was just interesting to you.
Yes.
Fascinating. So fast forward to 2 years, you were at sea and having an amazing experience. That's a long time.
Yeah, and I remember we came into port in Italy, and we stopped at a U.S. Navy base there, and they had a bookstore, which was thrilling because the books were in English. And I grabbed a bag full of books, and one of them was on the afterlife, and it was about mediumship. And I'm sitting there in the cockpit as we're sailing through the Mediterranean, reading this book, and this famous medium said, "Oh, people on the other side are working and they're doing this and that and reading." And I thought, this is crazy. And I actually threw the book out. And I didn't want my husband to see it because I thought he's going to think now I've lost it if I'm reading about people who die that are going on to read and work and play. Little did I know that would come back around, and I now tell people the same thing.
Huh, interesting. So what was the turning point for you to
Oh God.
understand that the
Well,
mediumship and the afterlife communication was possible?
that turning point came 6 weeks after that book kind of fell into my hands. This is why I look back and say there are no accidents. Because we were sailing off the coast of Croatia, just happy as could be, and had very sporadic email. And so we got the email, and there was an email from my husband Ty's daughter Elizabeth saying, "Call home, it's important." And it took us a day, Lisa, to get to a phone. This is the cruising life in Europe especially. And so we row our little dinghy ashore from where we're anchored out and go to a phone thinking, well, I don't know what's so important. And Elizabeth was staying with our daughter Susan's husband, and he answered the phone, and we said, "How are things?" And he said, "Not good." And I was listening in. Ty was on the phone, and he said, "Well, what's wrong?" And he said, "Susan is gone." And I just remember my husband crumpling against the phone booth, and I heard these words, and you think, "Wait, that's impossible. What does he mean? She's gone. This is our Marine, our daughter, who is 6 months pregnant. What do you mean she's gone?" And you just don't want to believe that it's true. And then you say, "What happened?" And he said that she was crossing the flight line at Marine Corps Air Station Cherry Point, and a bolt of lightning came out of the blue and struck her down. And she and the baby
Oh
were
my
gone.
goodness. She was not even in an active duty. She was walking.
She was on active duty. She was
She was.
crossing the flight line in
Wow.
her uniform, and there came that. I mean, the storm was 10 miles away, Lisa. It wasn't even raining.
Oh
And
my God.
I see now, I know now from, I mean, I ultimately wrote a book about another young man who was struck and killed the same way by lightning.
But how long did it take you after going through this process? How old was she?
27.
27. And you had a full military funeral for her.
Oh yes, we did. And right after that funeral, as we were heading for the airport to fly back to our boat in Croatia, I stopped at a bookstore and stood in front of the metaphysical section and said, something here. I have to find out about the afterlife. I have to find out if Susan still exists, because looking at her body in the coffin, I knew you could not kill her spirit. That was the biggest turning point for me. And so I grabbed 3 books to take back with me to find out if mediumship was real, having no idea that my life was about to change big time.
And what did your husband say?
Well, we were just so much
grieving.
Grief. I wasn't talking to him much about the afterlife at that point. He was just trying to get through each moment. But I'll tell you that we first stopped in Italy on the way back to Croatia, and we're sitting in a hotel, and I'm reading this book about the afterlife, and suddenly the TV in the room went on by itself. And I looked up at my husband. I said, how did that just happen? And I got up, turned it off, came back, and the very next paragraph in the book I'm reading said, those in spirit will often let you know they're around by playing with electronics.
Very interesting.
That was the start of several unmistakable signs that Susan was trying to let us know she was around. But at that point, I had no idea that I would one day be communicating with her very clearly.
I want to talk with you about some of the research that's been done on your communication with the afterlife and so forth, and get into the topics of the evidence of life after death. We'll talk about that in a minute. But first, I want to have you detail when you first recognized that you could communicate with this, with lost loved ones. Was it your daughter that came through first?
No, not at all. I had a reading with a medium. I dragged my destroyer captain husband to a medium, thinking we're going to get one shot at this. And happily, I was guided to one who brought through evidence, not just nice messages from the other side, but hardcore facts about Susan that she couldn't have known.
This was James Van Praagh?
No. This is just an unknown medium that was in the Washington, D.C. area that I was led to. And I did not give her my last name. I was very skeptical that anybody might Google and find out. And because of that, such a life-changing reading that brought through our Susan, I went on to write a couple books about mediumship. And in the process of writing the biography of medium Janet Nohavik, she pulled me to the front of her classroom where I was writing about her and how she teaches, and she said, you can do this too, and there's a spirit standing here. What do you sense? I thought she was crazy, and how could she put me on the spot like that? But I actually brought through my very first spirit there, and it wasn't Susan. It was a gentleman who told me, put in my head the word engineer, cancer, and gave me his nickname, Twinkle Toes. Twinkle Toes. And when somebody in the classroom raised their hand and said, yeah, that's my dad. He died of cancer. He was an engineer, and my mother called him Twinkle Toes. This was one of those turning points. There's no turning back. It was, how did that happen? You mean I can do this too? And it's just never slowed down from there.
That's such a fascinating, I mean, there's a lot more to Suzanne's story, and there's actually a whole documentary that's been done called Messages of Hope that's been featured in film festivals. When was that documentary done?
Oh, gosh, I think 4 years ago.
Oh, my goodness. That's how long ago did you first start communicating?
It was 2009 2008 when I discovered it, and 2009 when I really opened it up and started doing readings for other people. So it was 2 years after Susan passed that I discovered the ability, and that was 2000.
And we're going to talk about that, about how, what you started typing and when you went into your meditation. So we will continue Suzanne's story when we come back. Suzanne Giesman is my guest. Her book is called Messages of Hope. I am Lisa Garr, and this is Coast to Coast AM. We will be right back. Welcome back to Coast AM. This is Lisa Garr, and my guest, Suzanne Giesman, has such an incredible story, all the way from being the U.S. Navy commanding officer and aide to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to going through this experience that she went through on 9/11 that so deeply impacted her life that she got on a sailboat with her husband for 2 years across to Europe, where she discovered her passion was books on mediumship and the afterlife. That then, through the tragic death of her daughter, who was 6 months pregnant, she discovered, as you're about to learn, she was able to actually communicate. And this comes from a very, you know, she came from a very skeptical background, military. She would never have had this conversation before. Her whole family was in the military. She was very not voted most likely to be metaphysical in her high school. So we will continue with Suzanne's story when we come back. I also want to mention on Coast to Coast AM, on the website, coasttocoastam.com, you can be a Coast Insider. And for just 15 cents a day, you can access tonight's show and thousands of other shows and be a part of the community of people who hear the inside every night on Coast to Coast AM. You don't have to listen at night. You can listen during the day. So check that out when you get a chance. And we'll be right back. This is Lisa Gar. You are listening to Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. This is Lisa Gar, and my guest is Suzanne Giesemann. She's the author of Messages of Hope, and we've been talking about her story. So, Suzanne, when did you start to go into practices of meditation and so forth? When did that start for you?
Oh, Lisa, the very week that Susan was killed, I began. Because of all that reading that I'd done, somehow I knew that if her spirit really survived that lightning strike, and if I was going to be able to connect with her, I had to start meditating. And so I did. I started that very day 10 years ago and have barely missed a day since.
Tell us what happened on that day.
The day that I meditated?
No, when you started to hear the poetry.
Oh, that day. That day. Was actually probably a couple years, a year or so after I started meditating. I had somebody tell me, somebody in a metaphysical store, as a matter of fact, that something really interesting would happen with my guides in meditation that week. And I was still at the point where I thought, oh, this whole thing about spirit guides is crazy. I had so much to overcome, Lisa. But I was excited, and they said, have paper and pen ready because they're going to speak to you. So I have my pad of paper there, and I sit in meditation, and all of a sudden my finger twitched on its own. It just couple twitches, and I picked up my pen, and I heard these words, and I started writing them down. And I'd heard words in the past in meditation, but always I thought, oh, I'm just making that up.
Your imagination,
time,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. This time they flowed, and after about four sentences, all of a sudden I said, oh, my gosh. These words are rhyming, and it just continued. I flipped the page three times, writing these stanzas of a poem, and just burst into tears, Lisa, because suddenly I saw the brilliance of those in the spirit world. I had heard phrases before and thought I was making it up, but there was no way I could have written a three-page poem in under 5 minutes with a perfect beginning, middle, and end, all about the work I would be doing for spirit in the future. And my husband heard me crying. He said, what's going on? And I said, I think I wrote a poem. He says, what do you mean you think you wrote a poem? And I said, well, it just flowed. Let's read it together. And I read it out loud, and my destroyer captain husband had tears running down his face because he said, you were only back there a few minutes. That didn't come from you. And that was a real turning point for me to trust that I was tapping into something way beyond my normal waking consciousness.
Do you remember what you wrote?
Oh, this is so funny. It's not funny that you ask, because as I was preparing for this show, my guide said, pull up poem number one. I haven't looked at it in ages.
I think I read it at the beginning of your book, or I couldn't really tell.
You want me to read you a couple
Yes, I do.
It's just so beautiful. It says, from love we come, it's in your genes. You have the talent, we the means. Rest in peace, assured of light. With us beside you, you'll soar in flight. The world is ready for these, your words. They wait and listen with wings like birds. For ours is yours and yours is ours. Such is the greatness of the great spirit's powers. And it just goes on and on and on. That's two of about 30 stanzas that they gave me.
That is interesting. That was the one poem I read from your book today.
Yeah. It's the book starts out that way because I want to grab people's attention by saying, whoa, you mean that kind of thing can just come through somebody? Absolutely.
I noticed the word talent, and I thought that was such an interesting choice of words because it made me think, does somebody have to have this talent, or is it something that you can develop? You would be a great person to answer that.
Well, I know now, because I'm teaching mediumship classes, that we all have this ability or talent, call it what you will, but it's like somebody can learn to play the piano, but not everybody is Mozart. I don't know that I'm Mozart, but I'm the kid that has to practice their scales every day, and I do it probably with that military discipline so diligently that I am just dedicated to the meditation and dedicated to increasing my clarity in the readings that I do. And for that reason, I my goal is to be the best medium I can, so I practice those scales.
Ah, so how have you ever talked to any of your colleagues in the military about this? Obviously, they know your work. They will be able to find it. If we can find it, they can find it.
Sure.
What is their opinion? Or
well,
do you care?
It's funny. I mean, everybody I've talked to except one person is so enthusiastic and so excited because they know me and they know my background, and they think that's so cool. Wow, that if that really happened to you, then I can believe what my heart wants to believe. But it's funny, the one person that isn't into it is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. And I said, that's fine. I trust what you, that your background tells you one thing and mine tells me another. And for me to face him, it's like facing Goliath. You know, I did it without having to convince him of anything. And I'm totally okay if he doesn't believe in this. And for me, it was just wonderful to stand up to that, the not criticism from him, but disbelief and not wanting to really hear about it.
Mm-hmm, not really to prove it.
So yeah.
Then you started communicating and you started to receive this beautiful poetry. At what point did you then learn that you were an evidential medium?
Oh, wow. That was that moment in the classroom when another medium called me to the front. And so I went from being a journalist in the back of the room writing about the medium to practicing. And every practice session I had in the following classes with her, I was getting hardcore evidence. Now, what do I mean by that? Facts about the people who had died that I couldn't possibly know. Mm. Yeah.
And did you study, or did you have your work researched by Dr. Gary Schwartz, who's been a guest on Coast?
Yes. And that was a surprise, because his was one of those three books that I took back with me to Croatia after Susan was killed. It was one of those I pulled off the bookshelf because he was a credible researcher. And so it's a couple years later now, I'm sitting in my living room reading a book by Dr. Gary Schwartz when his mentor from the other side, Susie Smith, drops into my living room. I sense this presence and spirit. And she told me who she was, told me all kinds of things about her that I couldn't read in Gary's book. And she said, you will contact Gary. Well, it took me 2 days to find him because his contact information wasn't on his website. And, oh, he put me to the test. He wrote back and said, if you're really who you say you are, and if Susie Smith really is contacting you, then ask her these three things. And it went on and on like that till he was finally convinced I was the real deal.
Wow.
And that we should be working together. And we have been off and on for years now.
He really, that's great, though, to know that he put. So what types of things can you tell us or experiences have you had that shows the evidence of the afterlife?
Oh, wow. I could regale you with evidence for hours upon hours, but I think for skeptics who might be listening, the things that most convince me and others that this is real is the moments that I called not telepathy moments, where I can tell you I'm not just reading my client's mind. And that would be when a spirit just drops in when their loved one is not around. There's no feedback. I can't be reading body language. And they tell me things to pass on to their loved ones. And these are later validated. And then in a reading, those on the other side can share with me things that the client doesn't even know. But they're very clear, and I say, well, go check with another family member. And when they do, they find out it's true. So clearly, these are facts coming from their loved one's spirit who's still around, but they didn't know it. That's awesome.
Have you ever been contacted by the government or police agencies or as an investigator on any specific?
I haven't, but I have a dear friend who does that. So if some people have asked me about missing persons, I refer them to her, but it must not be my path because they haven't contacted me. I focus mainly on people who are in deep grief over loss.
I see. Well, I mean, what is your message with this? What is the mission you have with all of this? Does spirit tell you?
Oh, yes. It's, and I like that you use the word mission because I understand that as a Navy officer. My mission is to let people know that this life is not all there is, that there is a greater reality. We as souls here and now are walking in that world right now, in both worlds, but we are so focused on this human world that we miss the fact that our loved ones who have passed are still very much with us, still very much involved in our lives, and that love never dies.
See, this is so interesting. This is one of the things I have found from this research experiment I've been doing on the afterlife, is interviewing all of these experts, from doctors to scientists to professors, about the existence of the soul before and after this lifetime. And that is defined through, you know, karma and reincarnation. There's a lot of body of work on that, and Buddhists and Chinese philosophies and so forth, but not a lot of evidence or philosophy or even religious at all work on parallel lives, parallel universe. And so I believe, and from my near-death experience, if you can exist before and after this life, why wouldn't you be able to exist simultaneously?
Yes, one of the interesting things about this work is that I now channel my guides, the ones who gave me that poem, and in channeling their messages, they have confirmed these parallel lives, but they also tell us it's really hard for us in human form to wrap our heads around that concept.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, what do they confirm? And by the way, who are your guides?
They told me to call them Sanaya, and Lisa, the most amazing thing is that I later found out that Sanaya is an Arabic name meaning flash of lightning. They just confirmed that in the greater reality, as science has shown, there is no time. And so we have time so that things seem to unfold in a linear fashion with past, present, and future. But everything is actually happening in this one now moment, kind of like the dream state. If you go there in your mind to what it's like to dream, there's no sense of time in a dream.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, I mean, that was very true of what I experienced when I had my near-death experience, was that timelessness was very important. And I was not only timeless, but seamless, where all things seem to exist simultaneously as each other, if you know what I mean. You could become whatever it is that you would imagine, but you couldn't think, because thinking is a linear form. It was a state of being.
And it's all just there in one big burst, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Have you ever, when you, your guides, the Sanaya, is that different than your daughter when it comes through?
Yes. Sanaya is from a very high level. In fact, I just had a new CD come out today with channeled words from them that actually allow us to have this experience of ourselves as a soul. And it's stunning that the energy that their words carry. And I did it with a composer named Richard Schulman, who channeled the music at the same time. And this is so clearly from a higher level than those who have just recently passed from human life.
You have messages from Sanaya too. There's a website that comes through with daily blogs, right?
Right. It's part of my website on SuzanneGeisman.com. It's Sanaya Says, or you can go to SanayaSpeaks.com. But I have messages from them every day, and always, always, always the bottom line is about love.
Any prediction messages?
Very few. They won't even tell me about the election, but we don't want to go there, right?
Not right now. What about natural disasters and so forth?
That has not happened through me yet.
No sign of souls leaving the earth all at once.
No, haven't seen that.
Haven't seen that.
You know, the beautiful thing, though, is that even if that were to happen, having walked in that world now every day, I know that there's no fear around that. It would just be a transition to another state of awareness.
Being someone who has gone through an enormous amount of grieving and loss, when you're counseling others going through that, how much do you think that feeling of grieving and loss gets in the way of communicating?
It does get in the way, Lisa. And I mean, it's the reason why many people who have recently had a loss don't sense their loved ones. But that's part of the process. We have to work through that. And once you do, to know that that connection is there, that's a great impetus to realize I don't have to wallow in the grief. I don't have to stay there. And so
Do
if you can get past that just by some of the messages that show us that we're still here. We feel your pain and it's not necessary because we're fine. That's what those on the other side are trying to tell us. That's transformational and that lifts the grief. And then you can have an easier connection with your own loved one.
all the souls come through?
Do all of them come through? Well, I've had pretty good success. I've had people who say nobody's ever gotten my mother, or nobody's gotten my father, or I just had somebody tell me, somebody said my father doesn't want to talk to me, he can't come through, and that just kills me when I hear that, because we don't know that for sure. And so I'll try those readings, and if it's meant to be, it'll happen.
About those that have passed a while ago, 30, 40 years ago? Do you ever notice that their soul is not close any longer?
I've gotten evidence from people who've passed 50 years earlier and then people who've passed 5 days ago. So I believe it depends on will the greater good be served by them coming through.
And is that what you ask or is told you?
This is what I ask for. It's the intention that I set before every session, that somebody may come and sit in front of me and really want to hear from one specific individual. And I've learned that what we want is not necessarily what the big picture sees as the best outcome. So I've learned to open up every session with, may the greater good be served by whatever comes through. And it generally is who they want to hear from, but
That's a
then we
good
get to see.
intention. Yeah, that's a great way to set it. What about those who have taken their own lives? Do they come through, or is there a different plane that they show that they have visited?
I have more than my share of people who have taken their own lives coming through in readings, and every single one has said that they are surrounded by love and that they are not burning in hell. They don't all say that, but several of them have said that in word for word, I'm not burning in hell. But every one, I feel like a blue light around them, a peaceful blue light, and almost all of them with great regret for having cut short their opportunities here in Earth School.
Earth school. So this is just a continuation of our soul's journey, yes?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Just another chapter in our existence. So, we don't escape anything by taking our own lives. In fact, we have more lessons to learn as a result of it.
And to come back sooner. All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Suzanne's going to join us to continue this conversation on mediumship, on communication with evidence, and she said an entire workshop called The Preponderance of the Evidence, which is proving beyond reasonable doubt that life after death exists. We will come back and talk about that. This is Lisa Gar. You're listening to Coast to Coast AM.